admire your courage, Miss...
Trench. Sylvia Trench. I admire your luck, Mr...
Bond. James Bond.
Bonjour, Monsieur Bond.
Where's 007?
I think he's attempting re-entry, sir.
My God, what's Bond doing?
Keeping the British end up, sir.
Well, tell him to pull out. Immediately.
Can I do something for you, Mr. Bond?
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Hang on, James.
The thought had occurred to me.
Looking for shells?
No, I'm just looking.
You have a nasty habit of surviving.
Oh, what they say about the fittest.
Do you lose as gracefully as you win?
I wouldn't know. I've never lost.
No more foreplay.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Anders Holmes, and this is another episode of Bond Backwards, where we've been talking about the Bond films while started at the end with Spectre and working our way towards the beginning, which is Dr. No. So we took a bit of a memento approach to this. I am joined by my brother Adam, as always, over Skype in United States of what the fuck is going on, Land America.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, all right, thank you. It's hot today. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Just, I think, yeah, it's still here.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing new.
Yeah.
Right, so what are we doing? We're moving backwards, and we are now in the Roger Moore, comfortably into the Roger Moore epoch.
Yeah, or era, depending on your point of view, I guess.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, which one is longer, epoch or era? That's a good question.
I didn't even know. Epoch. I want to look this up.
Yeah. What is an epoch versus an era?
It's like, what's a Wookiee?
Octopussy. It's just
A period of time in history or a person's life, typically one marked by notable events or particular characteristics.
Well, all right, fair enough. I don't know what. There are some notable events, but they're not all good.
Yeah, that's true.
Octopussy.
Yeah. Octopussy was released in 1983. It was one of two Bond films that came out that year. It was competing at the box office with the Kevin McClory produced movie Never Say Never Again, which was the film that was there's an interesting, I think we'll get onto it when we talk about Thunderball, but there's a very interesting and sad kind of sort of behind the scenes kind of sort of problems that were going on when Thunderball was being made, and basically Never Say Never Again is a remake of Thunderball, and Sean Connery came back to play James Bond in that movie. So it's not an eon...
And slightly, you know, stabbed Kirby Broccoli in the back by doing so.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And from what I remember, it's not a great movie.
No, and it's a shame because... it's a shame he did it, because he conferred a certain amount of legitimacy onto it by doing the film... that Connery, that is. It's not good. It has, you know, the point of the... It feels like such a vindictive thing to do, to try to start an alternative Bond universe. I mean, they did it with the Casino Royale movie from the 60s, and,
yeah,
you know, it's not like it hasn't come up before, but it's just like... It's a very sad and messy situation that ended up, I think it, and I can't remember the exact story, but, it goes back to Fleming and Broccoli and Saltzman in the 60s, and this Kevin McClory character, and it was the rights, I think what was really at play were the rights to the Spectre plotline, and just using Blofeld and all that stuff.
Yeah,
it's a shame because, Fleming had written Spectre, well, but Fleming had written Blofeld into the books. I think Spectre was an invention of the films, if I'm remembering correctly. But for some reason, despite the films having sort of, having gotten the rights from Fleming, there was some cleavage of different rights on different, being held by different people, and lots of legal business. Yeah. So yeah, so it's so to compete with Never Say Never Again, they decided to release this thing called Octopussy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll get onto it with For Your Eyes Only, but it almost kind of felt like For Your Eyes Only seemed like a swan song for Roger Moore, I guess, because like between this and For Your Eyes Only, he ages a little bit, and he's sort of teetering a little bit on maybe a bit too old to play Bond. And by View to a Kill, he's way too old to play Bond.
Well, For Your Eyes Only would have been a great film to go out on, because it's actually a good Bond movie.
Yeah, it is.
And in that, if Your Eyes Only had been the last Roger Moore film, then you could probably say with some confidence that the Roger Moore era would have been pretty good, like, because you would have had two really good Bond movies in that and Spy Who Loved Me, two terrible ones, well, one really terrible one, The Man with the Golden Gun, and two ones that are kind of like, okay, Moonraker and Live and Let Die, which we can get to.
Yeah.
But
this one is but this one is a weird one, and I hadn't seen this movie.
Like, for a start, like, it's 1983.
Yeah.
You know, it's Reagan, it's Gorbachev, I think. It's Thatcher, who fucking appeared in the last Bond movie, Jesus Christ. It's new wave, punk has happened, the Falklands, blah blah blah. And you release a film called Octopussy. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know, and you're competing with Never Say Never Again, which, you know what? Like, say what you like. That's a cool Bond title.
Yeah.
Like, that is a, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have to mean anything. It just sounds cool. It's catchy. You're competing with Never Say Never Again. You know, everything is at stake. And you put out Roger Moore in eye makeup and in a film called Octopussy. Octopussy, like, that is so, like, where, how did that get onto a poster? Like, when they first saw that, like, what did they think?
Yeah.
And then they're like, you know what we'll do, we'll make a character called Octopussy, then we'll give someone a tattoo and she'll call that her Octopussy, and we'll all be like, tee hee. And it's like, every time you say it just gets worse and worse. The only thing that could be worse is if Connery had come back and done this film and then went around saying Octopussy.
Yeah.
I mean, or if they'd done some kind of mashup where it's like, oh, and have you met my friend Octopussy Galore?
Yeah, that would have taken me out of the movie entirely. I would have been like, I'm
out.
The whole
thing takes you out of the movie. The whole film is an exercise in... The film feels like it was directed by Andrew V. McLaglen, you know?
Yeah,
it feels like one of those, like, fun, late period John Wayne movies where it's just like everyone's just having a good time. And I'm sure they're having a great time. It looks like a lot of fun.
I think the problem with this movie, it doesn't...
The problem.
I mean, one of the problems.
One of the many, many problems.
One of the many problems. The thing is, it just doesn't feel like... It doesn't really feel like a James Bond movie. Even, like, the opening song, For an All-Time High, it sounds like a...
Oh, no, I don't know about that, because this is the era of the sort of... who's that again? Is it Sheena Easton?
No, that's For Your Eyes Only.
Who did this one?
Rita Coolidge. It sounds like it kind of sounds like the song for like a Brady Bunch spin-off TV series.
Yeah. I mean, it's not too bad because we've even had it doesn't. Yeah, it's not a good Bond theme. I'm not going to defend it, but it is the era of the, like, you know, we've had Carly Simon doing The Spy Who Loved Me, which, by the way, is one of the great Bond themes.
Yeah, it is.
And we've had
Sheena Easton. It's pretty good as well.
Sheena Easton in the last one, which I do not like that. I do not like that she is in the movie. I see also Madonna and Die Another Day. It feels like this is one of the things I have slightly less of a problem with.
Yeah.
Well, but even so, I mean, I feel like the Maurice Binder credit sequence is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think, I mean, all of the Maurice Binder sequences have been pretty cool.
Well, some of them are better than others.
I think the Man with the Golden Gun one is the one that's the most boring.
I can't remember that. Yeah. I mean, there are some issues, obviously, as well with gender stuff. But, you know, I mean, so where to begin? Let's begin at the beginning. I mean, the film starts with a guy in a clown suit crashing through a plate glass window with a Fabergé egg. And I think that's like, okay, guys, what's happened here? This is supposed to be a Bond movie.
Yeah, and then it's got a lot going on. And it also makes the film feel very sort of confusing a little bit, because it has something to do with General Orlov, who I think is kind of the sort of precursor to General Orimov from GoldenEye, played by Steven Berkoff, who is generally
just
quite...
change his name a little bit. No, Steven Berkoff, the way he chews the scenery in this is just like... Yeah. This is around the same time that he was playing Hitler in War and Remembrance, the miniseries of Robert Mitchum.
He played Hitler?
Yeah, you should see that. It's War and Remembrance, the Winds of War and War and Remembrance were like two of the big, like, prestige, big budget TV series that were made in the early 80s to, like, it was like a sort of rebirth of that kind of, like, prestige television in America. Mitchum was cast as this, like, you know, aging hero of these stories all about family in the war.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of great fun. Like, there's loads of fun people in it. Like, Brian Blessed turns up. Ian McShane is in it. You know, Jan Michael Vincent is in the first season, not the second. You know, all this. But in the second series, Hitler is played by Stephen Berkoff, which is hilarious. And he is incapable of not, like, overacting. He is the British Rod Steiger. He's just sitting there, be like, I'm shouting, and it's just like,
I am going to take over the world.
Yeah, and he goes bright red, and
just gets shiny and shiny.
Yeah, he gets very shiny, and I mean, I really like the thing is, I think if you really the tragedy with Octopussy is that the plot is just, I'm trying to sit here and trying to make the plot make sense. I must have seen the film about 6 or 7 times, and I still can't fully make sense of the plot. And how it's so tangled, but not in a good way. It's not tangled in a John le Carré, you know, Raymond Chandler way. It's tangled in a way where people just made a salad and forgot to toss it. So all the mushrooms are at the bottom, all the leaves are, you know, some of them are moldy, and you put two different types of dressing on it. You know, it's just, it's like a real mess of a movie. Like, for example, let's just talk about the clown. Can we talk about the clown for a second?
Yeah.
So the clown crashes through the window at the beginning with a Fabergé egg, right?
Yes. Fine.
Something about fake Fabergé eggs as well. So we got fake Fabergé eggs, we got a clown, and then but why does Roger Moore have to wear the clown suit later in the film?
Well, it's his way of...
The only answer to that is because there's two answers to that. One, someone thought it would be funny. Two, because it was some weird kind of foreshadowing to try and raise tension. But why would it mean... Like, is this some kind of magic clown costume that if you get into it, you get chased by Mishka and Grishka? Like, it doesn't make sense. Why is it the same clown costume?
That does not make sense.
How did he have time to put on that makeup? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It
makes more sense for him to get in a gorilla suit. Or just to wander in there and be like, I'm James Bond, motherfuckers.
It could have been really funny if somebody else was in the gorilla costume, like Clarence Beeks from Trading Places, and just dragged him out and then he got into the suit.
Yeah, right. I mean, or whatever. It just is like an example of where this film's like, so what's the idea there? The idea is that you get this like double clown payoff. Like, what? Why in a Bond film? Why? Why? What's it? And there are things in here that are good. Like, I think having Fabergé eggs as a device is great. I can't remember what the deal with them is now. I think there's
there's information in some of the eggs, and it's like they're selling them off to I can't really remember.
It's fucking confusing, isn't it? Like,
it's something to do, like,
there's something with the circus. So she is a smuggler.
Yeah.
So she's smuggling something, and it's supposed to be Fabergé eggs or something, and then it turns out that she's smuggling a bomb which is going to blow up in the base, and that means that General Orimov fucking hell is going to invade the West, even though he's not actually in charge of the Russian. It's so silly. It's so, like, hard to follow. And so basically the film becomes a series of, a series of sort of episodic, vaguely connected adventures.
Nothing really hangs together. It doesn't really feel in any ways exciting. And a lot of it...
Right.
And some of the times I feel Roger Moore does get pushed a little bit to the sidelines, and then we say, like, oh, there's an army of women, let's focus a little bit more on them.
Yeah, the army of women thing, that's kind of cool as an idea. The fact that they're all circus performers, I mean, that's very 80s. It feels like very kind of 80s network television. you know, the also Kamal Khan, like he is such a like never seen an easier Bond villain. Like he's just so unthreatening.
He's such a like pushover, and also he does like the whole thing with him in the like, you know, when you see him like in the backgammon game, that almost just feels like a ripoff. I know they're trying to homage that whole thing with Goldfinger when he's playing cards in the Miami hotel, but and then his, you know, bodyguard played by Gabir Badi, Gobinda, is basically a Oddjob, you know, ripoff. And then again, every other actor who's a bit like Oddjob in the Bond movies is basically a ripoff of Oddjob. So they're like ripping off each other.
He's big, he's not white, and he can crush things with his bare hands.
Yeah, which Oddjob does in Goldfinger when he gives him back the golf balls and he crushes them in front of James Bond.
Yeah, no, so Kamal Khan is a bit, I mean, he's always got like a quip, but he's very uninspiring ultimately. He doesn't feel very threatening, and then he just crashes his plane into the ground at the end of the film.
Yeah,
Govinda's good. I do think Govinda is a good henchman. And I think the choice of India as a location is really fun. There are some hilariously problematic and racist moments, of course. That's inevitable with a film of this era, but we shouldn't excuse them. I think the bit where he starts throwing money around in the streets is like a little bit disgusting. And some of the little, like, the sort of idea that the India is just like this endless carnival of like street performers, and you know, it feels a little bit sort of orientalist, a little bit Aladdin. So I definitely give the film a slap on the wrist for that. But the location itself works brilliantly, and you get the great thing in a Bond movie where you get to put him into contact with all this, you know, with the wildlife, you know, crocodiles, people get eaten by crocodiles, people getting, you know, there are snakes and spiders and stuff. But then, Anders, you see, this is the problem with the Roger Moore era. Then they can't resist. And what happens then?
There's a tiger.
Sit. No. Yeah, it might be like a right cunt. Like, that doesn't. No. Just what? And then he swings on a vine and they play the Tarzan.
And he is. And he's being chased by people on elephants as well. Like. Yeah.
Right. It just starts to go mental, and it's like, because, and this is the thing, right? You strip away all the fluff, and you've got a decent Bond film, I think, in here. So, for example, the pre-credit sequence acts pretty fun. He blows up a big Cuban base using that plane that he flies through the hangar. I mean, that's just like, that is fun, stupid Roger Moore era action stuff.
Yeah, I think that bit works really well. And it's, you know, the bit where he just goes to the gas station and says, fill her up, please. And then it goes into the credit sequence. And it's nice. It's a nice little beginning. It works well for what it is.
And then you've got nefarious rogue Russian general and this smuggling operation with this guy Kamal Khan, who's going to get rich from it. And he doesn't have any scruples about starting World War III in the process.
Yes.
Fine. So then you mess it up with all this other business and Mishka and Grishka and Octopussy herself and all this other, like, and then the problem with it is that at some point they try and be all profound, you know, where she talks about her life and background and everything else, and you know, tries to make a point about being, you know, judged as a woman or whatever, and it just doesn't land because the film is just so daft, and the bits that are meant to be kind of scary aren't scary, and the bits that are supposed to be exciting are less exciting than they should be. And you know, they throw everything at the wall. You know, they have the countdown clock, they have car chases, train chases, that, you know, they put a car on the rails. They've done everything they possibly can think of. They give Bond two, you know, beautiful women to shag. You know, henchmen are plenty. You know, he has his little friend who gets killed. Who's played by the tennis star? What's his name?
Vijay Amitray.
Yeah, and he uses a tennis racket at one point. Of course he does. And of course he's a snake charmer, because all Indians know how to snake charm. And he plays the James Bond theme, which is
pretty weird,
I think, jumping the shark a little bit. But that's not for the first time in the Roger Moore era. They do that a lot.
When did they do that again? I can't remember exactly.
Well, think about, do you remember in Live and Let Die with the tarot cards?
Oh, yeah. And also there's a woman
who... They have 007 written on the back. Why would the bad guy have tarot cards with 007 on the back?
Yeah, and there's also when they go to the bar in New Orleans that she starts singing the theme song.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, because you could just say, oh, well, you know, that's okay. I can take that, but when they actually play the Bond theme, but then there's other, you know, we can talk about this with Moonraker too, because there's a couple of bits in Moonraker where you're just like, oh god.
Yeah, you start doing a double take like they do with the pigeon.
But anyway, so Octopussy basically ends up being a fucking mess. But where, if you were assuming COVID-19 wasn't happening and you were going to go on holiday somewhere, where would you like to go that takes place in this film?
Probably India, because I've never been to India.
Yeah, the floating palace. I can't remember where it is. Is it in Jaipur or somewhere? But I'm gonna get this. I can't remember where that floating palace is, but it's a hotel. I want to go stay there. Let's go together.
Sounds good. Yeah, it'll be fun. Did you, when you were in India the last time, did you ever come across any like snake charmers or anything like that, or did you see any?
I did come across some snake charmers, and I forgot to ask them what they were charging me for the show. So they did the snake charming show. The guy put a cobra on his head, which I thought was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And then he was like, he put the snakes back in the basket really quickly, and the snakes were like, ah! And then put them back in the basket, and then got up and was like, I want 8 million rupees or something. And I was like, I have this many, and he was like, that's not enough. And I was like, well, I don't have any more on me, and I don't know where there's a cash point, so this is a bit awkward. So I said, tell you what, I'll run up there and I'll try and find someone, I'll pay you back later. And I just like ran away and hid in my hotel. And then I was like, shit, have I got rogue snake charmers on my tail now who are going to like put a cobra in my bed or like fucking string me up or whatever? So I was, and I was my friend Bob, who couldn't walk at the time. That's a different story. And then
did you get like electrocuted or something?
Oh yeah, he also got electrocuted in the shower. Yeah, but anyway, he had some muscle problems or whatever. So I was out on my own, and I went up to this temple, and I was coming down the hill. I saw the same fucking snake charmers, and they saw me, and I was like, ah, Jesus! At least at this point, I'd gotten some more cash, and so I sort of bravely walked up to them. I was like, listen, this is all I've got, and gave it to them, and they finally sort of left it at that, and then they gave me this like rock as a trinket, and I thought, I was like, I don't know what this means. So, and maybe if I have this rock, it means that there's going to be like 8 deadly curses will happen to me. The minibus that I'm in will topple off a cliff or something. So I just left the rock in the hotel room. I was too scared of it. I thought it was some kind of bad spirit thing that was going on, which yeah. just, you know,
just goes to
show that the way that the West thinks about the rest of the world is totally fucked up, because they were just being nice. What are other fun bits that we always do?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like I would say, I mean, what would your favorite scene be? With like the beginning sequence, or was there another favorite sequence? Like, what's that?
Oh, I think my favorite sequence is actually the one where the Russians are having their planning meeting, and Orlov is like, we're gonna do this and we're gonna blow it up, and it's going to be amazing. And it's like, and then what's his name?
Gogol.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
General
Walter
Gogol.
Gotell.
Yeah, General Gogol.
Gogol is like, what? What the fuck? What are you talking about? That's mental. And that feels like a metaphor for the entire film. So I like that bit. And you're going with the opening pre-credits?
Yeah, the opening pre-credits. And I kind of like the assault on Kamal's palace at the end of the movie, and the bit where he's going down the stair banister shooting at people. I think that's kind of funny.
That's fucking stupid. that is my stupidest bit of the film. The Union Jack balloon with Q in it, with these two old, like cumulatively, Q and Roger Moore at that point, Desmond Llewellyn and Roger Moore are probably about 150 years old. There's these two old English men in a Union Jack balloon in India. Look, think about what that symbol means in that part of the world. And then, yeah, the banister where he shoots the thing. He's, like, waving the AK-47 around. Like, you're never going to hit anything. And then he shoots the thing instead of just, like, toppling off the banister or, like, putting his feet out or something. It's so, so silly. What's your stupidest bit of the film?
I don't know. I think the bit where he just dresses up as a clown and tries to, like...
Yeah. I'll leave you that one.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's just the setting of the circus and him as a clown and telling, there's a bomb in here. I think they could have made that sequence just a little bit more exciting if it wasn't just set at a circus. I think just the area just didn't feel like...
I think you could even have made it exciting if it was set at a circus. But the problem is, you need to... You can't dress your main character as a clown and expect people to take it seriously.
I think if they took a more sort of Hitchcock approach to it, I think it would have been a lot better, that whole sequence.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. The Hitchcock,
like, you know,
Hitchcock would have known how to do that.
Like Man Who Knew Too Much, like the whole Royal Albert Hall bit before the gun goes off.
Or The Lady Vanishes with the carnival at the end.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was, okay. I mean, there's a lot of ways they could have done that better. But, I mean, who would you have recast in the film?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know. There are some bad performances in this.
I would replace Louis Jourdan, rest in peace, as I would replace him with Malcolm McDowell, because I think Malcolm McDowell is someone who could fit quite well in a James Bond movie, and I think he could play that. I mean, if they changed maybe certain aspects of
his... You need to do some rewrites of the script to make him out actually more threatening, but yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
maybe explain the fact why he's played by Malcolm McDowell and, like, Afghan British, I have no idea, but I feel like Malcolm McDowell is that, he has that kind of sinister, charming aspect of him that could work as a villain, maybe. I don't know, it's not, maybe not as a, if they were going to do like a movie with him nowadays, maybe they could do him as like a villain from the sides or a supporting villain. I have no idea. But yeah, I think that's generally who I would replace. What do you think of Maude Adams? Because I generally prefer her in Man with the Golden Gun than I do in this film. I think her performance in Man with...
Well, it's confusing because she was in Man with the Golden Gun. Everyone remembers her from Man with the Golden Gun. And we don't see her face for ages, and then it feels significant that it's Maude Adams. And then it's like, hang on, is she supposed to be the same character? So in order to fix that confusion, I would recast Octopussy, and I would put in instead Vanessa Redgrave.
Yeah, because they keep going. They talk like they. She Don't says,
you, I, wait, "Can you just pause? My God, how awesome would it be if Vanessa Redgrave was Octopussy? You just breezed right past that. She'd be brilliant in casting."
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I did also see. I think I was looking through the Wikipedia page. They almost did get Faye Dunaway, but they deemed her too expensive.
Oh, that would have been, because it would be post Mommy Dearest, I think, Faye Dunaway, or at least it's that era where Faye Dunaway started to go a bit mental. So that could have been cool too. Yeah.
Yeah, but it just, because in
the recasting of Maude Adams is a mistake. Like, it's too. Again, it's like this era of Bond films are all like tangled up in their own tail. You know, they just can't escape from their own. Like, it just feels like this huge club, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, but one of the things I was getting onto, because like Maude Adams is like Octopussy goes on. She sort of explains, you don't know who I am, do you? And like, you don't remember me or something like that. And then she sort of explains a character who we've never seen in any of the Roger Moore films at all. It probably would have made sense if she made it seem like she was a twin sister of like Andrea Anders or something like that from Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, or something else. Like, it just doesn't, like, doesn't land at all. That's the mean what I was saying earlier. When they try and make the film profound, it doesn't work.
Also, I will say with this film, as much as I do like Robert Brown as M, I think the presence of Bernard Lee is dearly missed.
Yeah, Robert Brown does fine in his outings as M. This is his first one. And,
well, not his first Bond film, actually. He stars in Spy Who Loved Me. I generally think his character in Spy Who Loved Me turns out to be the new M.
Yeah, I think that's accepted.
Yeah.
I think that's the general theory.
You know, like Mallory in Skyfall, and then he's M Inspector.
Right. What other things do we talk about on this thing?
We've done locations, we've done
recasting, casting. Bit. So do you want to give it a rating?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with 2.5 martinis out of 5.
I'm gonna give it 2. Yeah,
I think that's sort of, yeah, I mean, it's
not a good film.
Not sorry, not, guys. I think if you were having like a James Bond marathon, and if you kind of skipped it, and then it probably wouldn't, you know, wouldn't mind.
It's a skipper, yeah.
Yeah, but you want to know who, like, screen tested? Because there was a point where Roger Moore wasn't sure if he was going to come back. Do you want to know who they screen tested?
It was too early for Sam Neill. Who was it?
James Brolin.
Yeah. An American Bond.
They did ask Adam West at one point, but he said, like, I'm flattered, but James Bond should be played by a British actor.
Also, Adam West or James Bond was...
I like a shaken, not stirred martini, please, old chum. Quick, to the Aston Martin.
My favorite story about Adam West is when he was on The Simpsons, and he gets tied up, his character, Batman, gets tied up, and they were directing him in the vocal booth. and they said, make sounds like you're struggling in vain. And he just went, struggling in vain. And they kept it in the show, and it's so funny.
Yeah.
I think he was a real one of a kind. All right, well, let's get out of here and return. James Bond will return in For Your Eyes Only, which is a much better film.
It's a much better film. And I think it was the first film that John Glenn directed. So he started good and then ended good, because his last film he did was License to Kill. He just had a few little bumps along the way.
Right, okay, well, on that fascinating note, let's get out of here.
Yes, well, do check back with us next time on another episode of Bond Backwards. We will be talking about For Your Eyes Only. Do check out the other episodes that we've done on Apple Podcasts. I sounded like a snake when I said that. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and TuneIn. So that has been that. My name is Anders Holmes, and I've been joined by Adam. Have a good day.
Stinging in the rain.
That's not funny, 007.
Where's your butler friend?
Oh, he blew a fuse.
Shocking.
Where's Drax?
Oh, he had to fly.
Positively shocking.
You missed, Mr. Bond.
I think he got the point.
Right idea, Mr. Bond. But wrong pussy.
You're not thinking that.
I sure am, boy.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Goodbye, Mr. Bond.
It's Smith and Wesson. And you've had your six.